Dude, it was so
hard work pays. Yeah.
But right. I mean, that was like the day I always dreamed about. So I woke up every morning. Yeah. I was like, this is exactly what I wanted. Let's do it. Yeah. And I'm not going to stop until it's done.
Welcome back.
This is the Late Night Motor Club.
The only podcast you care about. I'm Alex.
I'm Steven.
And I'm Tyler.
Bang.
Hey.
Yeah. What's up, guys? How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
I'm doing good.
Car's going okay?
Yep.
Still scanning, I'm assuming.
Still going. Still same thing as last week, but I have been thinking about some other things that I'm going to be doing to the car in terms of like interior work, engine work, and all that, planning that accordingly, going from there. But how's the LC running for you?
I think I cut my toe arms too short, and I think I need to add a quarter inch to them now, so that's sick. Love that. Yeah. That plus height sensors. And then
they look great, though. It looks great.
Thanks. It's stressful, but making it work.
It's cool. Yep. It's cool seeing it all finished up.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's a sick ass paperweight. What about you, Tyler?
Form over function. Am I right?
Oh yeah, dude. I'd rather look at it than drive it.
Yeah, I got a little bit done on my car. A little bit more sanding. But what I did do is I picked myself up another vehicle.
Oh yeah,
what kind of vehicle?
A vehicle that's got two wheels.
A bicycle.
Oh, motorcycle.
So, guys, I just picked up a bus pass this week.
Yeah, I got myself a new motorcycle.
That's fun.
Nice.
Excited.
Cool.
What kind of motorcycle is it?
It's a V-Star 1100.
Nice. I'm going to pretend like I know what you just said.
Yep.
Cool. Nice. So, going into what we're going to kind of talk about today is the next three episodes, including this one, we're going to talk about ourselves a little bit. And what I mean by that is kind of talking about where we've come from, the car we've built, things we've developed, companies, all that type of stuff, and just kind of giving ourselves a little bit of a spotlight just so we could introduce ourselves so that way you guys know who we are.
Yeah, in case you're coming to this podcast like fresh off the streets. And you're like, who the hell are these guys?
Why are you talking about washers?
Yeah. Just give a little background just so you guys have some reference for later on.
And then it's more cohesive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
with this episode, we're going to start off with talking about Alex.
Alex.
Yay.
Hey, nervous? Guys.
Great intro.
A little nervous?
Always. Yeah.
So, Alex, sorry.
Steven. Go for it.
We keep trying to talk at the same time this time. It's okay. But, so you starting off, let's kind of go back to the very beginning. Not like, I mean, I guess you can go to the very beginning. Back in Virginia. Take us all the way back to high school.
Back in Virginia. First car. I mean, if we're going to go all the way back there.
Gotta say it.
$500 Honda Civic LX.
Shout out.
Absolutely clapped. Didn't want to do anything to that, purposely refused to modify it in any way, even though all my friends were doing Civic stuff, because I had my eyes on a little bit nicer car, the Genesis. The Genesis was the real, like, first actual project, feeling, I don't know, more inspired than the Civic, I guess. It's hard to describe, but...
You know, it's so funny, like, there... Kind of going into why you picked the Genesis, seeing that you are such a hardcore, if anybody out there knows who Alex is, if you don't, he's a hardcore like JDM enthusiast.
Well, when I started,
a Korean car.
Yeah, that's another L. But when I started, I was a Euro guy, just because of, I think, I don't know if I talked about this before, but GameCube, I had Need for Speed Underground 2, and every time I raced in that game, I picked a Peugeot, which I was dumb enough to believe was a GTI at the time, and so I just loved, like, European hatchbacks, and then I and I got some taste, I became pretty obsessed with the Japanese side of stuff, just from a cultural aspect, I thought was more intriguing to me, so I went down that route. But like you said, got a Genesis, which definitely wasn't on that route at all, but it worked out. I loved that car. It was good for the time being, and it was definitely more than I needed, even. Like, it felt like in my head, that was a Lambo to me at the time, you know.
Yeah.
But that was around the same time I started my brand Broke Boys, the first one, even nice. Before Street Akuma, because I crashed the Genesis into a curb and broke a bunch of aftermarket stuff, needed some money to recoup those damages, and was like, oh, I'll make some stickers. At the time, obviously, Broke Boys is like the most clapped, played out name ever now. And guess what? Still was back then, too. So I did that to try to recoup some of my losses there.
What year was that?
That was 2013, 2014-ish. Of yeah. Like around the time.
I like the mentality going into that though. Like, I crashed my car. Let me start a business to fund my broke parts. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, in reality, even before that, I was like obsessed with brands like Illust and stuff like that. So in my head, I was like, oh, I always have wanted to start like some sort of project or brand based around my interests and my like niche focuses and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of almost gave me an excuse to start it. And it was super weird because in the beginning I was like, who's going to buy any of this? And then my homies were all pretty supportive and all that stuff, which was super fun. And I slowly transferred that into Street Akuma, but that was a little bit later on. And yeah.
Right. So like, let's jump into it now that you're building the Genesis coupe, right? You're recouping your money. You've built this brand now, and your goal is to build the Genesis into one of the lowest static
GTI. Yeah.
Lowest Genesis.
So Genesis. Pretty much talk. Talk about the Genesis a little bit in terms of how it started when you first got it, building it over the years, and kind of where it finished off to.
I guess to start, I mean, I got like little pieces here and there, like body stuff. I got an intake, dude. Short rail. So sick.
Performance, bro.
Yeah, bro. I'm a race car kid. But what
was the end goal for like the Genesis, the vision that you had in mind for this car?
The end goal was just like, I wanted like a crazy static stance car in a similar, this is going to seem like too niche, but there was a very specific style coming out of Southern California at the time of static cars around like 2014 to like 2016. And I was really looking up to groups like Project Zero, Pure VIP, and like all those kind of OG homies. Yeah. Not homies at the time, but yeah. Somehow have met them now, and they're all fantastically nice people. Shout out to y'all. But bringing that style to like the East Coast, where I never saw a car built in Virginia where I was like, oh, this thing is like my style. Like, I want that. I only saw that in the cars that I saw over here on like the really early days of blowing up on Instagram.
Right.
Where you'd see like a shot from Offset Kings. And
Yeah. Throwing it back to Offset Kings. Jeez. But at the time, Alex and I, we were both kind of building Genesis around the same time. And these parts to make these cars look this way, fit this build type, kind of fit into the scene.
They did not exist.
So you had to bend over backwards to try and make this thing happen, or even try and figure out information, because everybody and their mother who was doing it wasn't telling you how they did it or how they got their parts. So you had to just kind of...
It was super, super like... It sounds like an exaggeration because the stuff that was so hard to find nowadays is just such like common sense, like slotting and like all that kind of stuff. Back in the day, someone like briefly mentioned to me something about slotting.
And you were like, what the fuck is slotting?
Yeah, I was like, that doesn't sound safe at all, which...
What is slotting?
It is. Slotting is if you... What's that?
Your strut.
Pretty much you have like a suspension bolt that goes through, and if you slot it to make it eccentric, you're able to kind of get more camber.
Yeah, you're basically just pushing the knuckle back with it, but there's a certain name for that type of like bottom bracket, but
your McPherson style strut or whatever, the one that
might be it. But yeah, I found on like deep into like an Integra form, funny enough, was like a GIF of a guy doing it. And that was like the only example that existed. And I was like, okay, put the lug nut on there, put the socket, drill, just
wing it.
Yeah. But that was the start of that with trying to do stuff off form stuff. And because of that, because the knowledge wasn't like just readily available, the parts weren't readily available, I ended up doing like a crazy long way and using like FRS struts in the rear to convert it to a true coilover instead of the spring bucket,
yep.
Which allowed me to run like the springs I wanted to get the fitment and all that shit that I wanted.
Shout out to, I'm going to say Swift Springs.
But it's 326, of course. I've been big fan of them for a long time, but yeah. That's another topic.
So your LC isn't your first 326 car, is it?
No, my God. I didn't jump the bandwagon. I don't even want to get into that, but we can talk about that another time. But that was around the same time where I was doing the Street Akuma stuff a lot more seriously after that car came off jack stands after like 4 or 6 months or whatever it was.
Yeah, for people who don't know what Street Akuma is, kind of explain that to us. Like, what was the Street Akuma
thing? Basically taking the same idea I had for Broke Boys, but trying to expand it into something I was a lot more like proud of and working towards like clothing, as well as like kind of combining it with like some media stuff, even though at the time I was also kind of doing like a repost page / like trying to post my photography to make my photography look more legit. But yeah, that was my...
So pretty much it was like a rebrand that was much more fitting to what you wanted to see out of...
At the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Which then later down the road led to... I started vlogging and that like helped the business a ton and trying to like just grow customers through social media and all that stuff. The standard.
Yeah.
So with finesse. With building the Genesis, with having Street Akuma... one thing in between all that is making the transition from Virginia to California.
Right. I was just going to say that. Yeah. Being inspired heavily by the California scene that you wanted to bring to the East Coast, and now you're going to leave the East Coast once you achieve that and come straight out here.
Yeah, that's like the main reason that I wanted to ship the Genesis over here so bad and drive it over here, which this is going to sound stupid. But so like my favorite car for a long time was a guy named Nabil. He changed his Instagram name like 1,000 times, but he drove a red static FRS on LXZs. And like, I looked up to that guy because at the time he was like the craziest static build out there. And then ironically I was driving like by the kaleidoscope over here and, he passed me and DM'd me one day. He was like, "Oh, sick car, dude. Like it makes me miss my old thing." And I'm like, "Oh, this is fucking crazy." So like, because of like stuff like that, I was super stoked that I did end up like spending a little bit of money to ship it out here, even though I only had it here for a year, which I moved in late 2016, 2017.
Right.
So it took me from like 2014 in high school up until mid 2016 to really like finish and get the Genesis where I wanted it. But as we know, by the time I got the car here and drove it for a while and got pulled over a handful of times, I was like,
yeah, not worth
it. I can't even like get this registered in the state. This is gonna like, this is not possible after seeing the stuff that like my parents had to go through just to get their stock cars registered here. It was like just crazy detailed like checklist of stuff.
Yeah. Didn't you say you got a ticket within like a week of driving the car?
Yeah. So this is back when I was like vlogging. The day my car landed, I filmed a vlog about it, and I was like, "We're gonna take bets on the channel. Comment down below how long it's gonna take for me to get a ticket in this car, and like list right the away. Amount of days." And people were like, 2, 3, 50 days, 2 months, all this stuff, 7 days.
Somebody was like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's what it felt like, dude. Waking up early for Wii Fest one time in Laguna, just started the car, was trying to get to the freeway, didn't even make it like 100 feet, got pulled over. But that's understandable.
That is California for you.
Yeah, which I feel like the real problem with that car was the exhaust was like sticking out 6 inches, like quad 4-inch blast pipes.
I think the problem was how are you going to tell me it was just the blast pipes? That car was about an inch off of the ground, if not lower than that, and just completely static, and that's all that it did.
Yeah, but all the cops here care about is like emission stuff.
The exhaust wasn't very discreet.
Yeah. It was loud, especially because one time on the way to a Springfest show, I had too much gas in the car, and I had to like burn it off. So I just like just went on the freeway and just ripping it, and I ended up blowing the cats out on the freeway on accident. And then
on accident.
Yeah, I mean, because it like backfired. So I was like, bang, 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 and then they're just like, boom. it was a mess. But so basically I couldn't get that car registered here, so in my head I'm like, okay,
what's next?
Time to do this upgrade I've always been wanting and all this stuff. And the brand at the time had been just bringing in like enough money to do that, and then I used some of the money I made from Street Akuma to buy the RC 350F Sport.
With the RC, that was a car that it wasn't an impulse to sit. Like, you wanted that car for a while too.
Yeah,
right?
I was still in Virginia, like posting stories about like if I ever get a next car,
this is it.
Hint, hint, hint.
If you will, manifested.
Manifesting my destiny, bro. Oh my god.
but yeah, I had that envisioned for a long time, and it kind of served purpose as like a daily driver type of situation, because I didn't want to go too crazy with it, because I knew I'd be like, I left everything I ever worked for in my life back in Virginia to move out here and be starting from scratch, looking for jobs, all that kind of stuff, which they were all far, because I was moved back in with my parents when I moved back here, and they were in a spot that was like pretty much not close to
Anything that you were trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everything was like an hour and a half away.
Build plan with the RC, given that I know it was on air suspension, you had wheels, all that.
And the wheels, may I add, were absolutely sick.
Oh, yeah. They were the same wheels that you
currently
have.
Exact same ones I got right now. Same colors and everything.
But with that, with the RC, you didn't go as aggressive with your specs, because obviously it was something where you wanted to be somewhat more dailyable.
Yeah.
Based off, you didn't know where you had to drive the car. Mm-hmm. You wanted it to be practical in a way.
So. Which eventually got to the point, because of the struts I chose to get were so terrible, that is what hindered me the most, because I couldn't air up. Like, full air up was only like 3 inches off the ground. I was like, oh shit, what did I do?
So you built it to be a little bit practical and still stance, but then it was not practical.
Yeah, it was still like a thousand times. It felt like I was driving an SUV compared to the Genesis. So compared to that, I was like, oh, this is nothing.
Night and day.
Yeah. I was like, this is cakewalk. But and then around then, I made the transfer to Dead On from Street Akuma, which I'll get more into that in a second, I guess. But the Street Akuma stuff really grew me my initial I don't want to say, I guess like an initial base of people kind of just remotely interested of what I was doing. And I used that to like kind of travel around the kind of East Coast side of stuff. Would go to like Bristol, Tennessee, go see a bunch of homies up there, try to like make content with big homie Brandon. Shout out. almost driving me off cliffs, taking the steering wheel off, and then it not clicking back on. That was a fun time. Insert that clip right here. I got it somewhere. I enjoyed it back there in like a different way, just because it was all local and those were all the people I like grew up with. But then by the time I moved out here, which is like 2017, still had Street Akuma for, I don't know, maybe a year here. And then I decided to kind of branch out. I wanted to take things in a little bit different of a direction, because I felt that Street Akuma was more of like a, in my mind, like a 2014 time capsule of like, this is what the style was. And to make it anything other than what it already was would be changing it dramatically anyways.
You couldn't really expand on it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I kind of dug myself into a hole with it, which I don't regret. I still enjoy like the whole process of that and working with like brands like Sumo Speed, Trap House and all that stuff. Dead On just allowed me to kind of just do more, even if it wasn't 100% like obviously car related. It allowed me to kind of branch out in that area, which I enjoyed, and that's when I started getting more into the like filmmaking and more cinematic stuff and got away from the vlogs.
Steven, are you noticing something that I'm noticing? As we're learning more about Alex's life, it seems every time he gets a new car, he changes his brand.
That's only once.
Oh, man.
It's just once. There's two
cars.
Wait,
we went from Broke Boys to Street Akuma.
Broke Boys and Street Akuma were on the Genesis. And then I sold the Genesis, got the RC, and then transitioned to Dead On. Now I have the LC.
Still dead on.
Next week?
Next week? No.
No, this is the one. This is the one.
So one thing to know that's cool, I think it was around the time where right after you rebranded to Dead On and you had the RC, I think that's when I met you initially.
Yeah, I remember seeing you around some of the local meets around here. And then I don't know how we ended up talking, but I remember...
I think it might have been through IG, which is, in my opinion, cool, because it's like... just off, let's say a message off IG, DM each other, something, it created something we have today.
Oh, yeah. Dude.
I think that's how
the three of us came together.
Completely, yeah.
Yeah, because, I met all of you guys.
Yeah, because Alex and
you two met before, like way back.
And that was literally through the same thing, Instagram, because we were both building Genesis.
Genesis crew. Shout out. Oh, major throwback.
Yeah, so as soon as he came here, we linked together, and then the same thing kind of with you and I. We met over social media the same way.
Yeah. That's how I, like, I can't thank Zuck enough for... I met all my friends through, like, Instagram, Facebook back in the day. I remember, like, on the East Coast, it was so cool. It was just like, oh, because of this car shit, because of Instagram... I have homies in like every state. Whenever I go visit somewhere, I'm like, yo, let's go do car shit here. Let's go do car shit there.
Yeah.
Like that's in my mind, like the best part of all this. But so with that transition from like Street Akuma over to the Dead On stuff, like I was saying earlier, I wanted to get more away from the kind of cliche kind of car style stuff, not cliche, but, just more like pigeonholed car focused, like stance scene focused. To where like back in Virginia I was throwing like car shows and car meets and all that kind of stuff, and I knew I wouldn't be able to really step foot in the ring out here because of how big and like respected the car shows are out here. Like this is the epicenter for all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So I really wanted to focus more on my media aspects. I've always wanted to shoot like the short film kind of cinematic style videos, and the only reason I started vlogging back in Virginia was because I didn't have the money to get the equipment that I wanted to start shooting those. So I was just like trying to make it work with whatever I got.
And with that on, now you had that equipment. So it allowed you to push that videography, that cinematography aspect a lot more and develop it kind of it's what you really wanted to do for yourself, right?
Yeah, I got a job at Three Piece as their, Three Piece US as their filmer. And I didn't have a gimbal or anything. He was like, "Do you have a gimbal?" I was like,
"No."
Yeah. And then I went home. Amazon just overnighted it. Showed up to work the next day. And I was like, "I don't know what I'm doing." Anyways. Yeah, everyone knows about that. I don't even have to say it.
Shout out. Dude, I remember back in the days. I used to ask Alex how he got his B-roll so crispy. And he's like, "Bro, just saw optical flow and a little."
Yeah, just a little. Whap, whap. But yeah, that's what I always... really wanted to do, and I used Dead On as my excuse to really dive more into that. I still don't do as much as I wish I could, but you know, with real life and just all this work and shit, just trying to make as much as I can.
One thing to pretty much tell the audience as well is somewhere in that process of Dead On, you made the transition from having a day job to Dead On being your full time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was doing valet when I moved here. That was great. That was like the most money made at like a real normal job ever for me. But then I always had this idea, like the thought in my head, like I want to one day make this stuff like a full-time job and be able to like pay bills and not just afford like some car parts here and there. But yeah, so... my last job was working as a salesman at a Toyota dealership, and then I got just insanely frustrated working there with the management and all that stuff, and got real pissed one day, and then decided, and I was like, you know what?
I'm gonna send it.
Yeah, they were like, hey, dude, did you study this, this, and this for today's test and blah, blah, blah? And I was like, actually, I quit. And then they were like, why? And I was like, because I got a real job. Didn't have a job. just completely sent it. And I was like, I'm going to take this TikTok shit way more seriously. Try to push that. See what I can do with it in like a certain time frame with this little bit of money I saved up from working different places. And then, ironically, I rebuilt my website for the first time in forever. I was like, I want to kind of revamp everything that I'm putting my energy into this. And I released stickers that said, try f***ing harder. And about a month after that, I released the mirrors. And then I really had to try f***ing harder because that just like blew up out of nowhere completely. I mean, pretty much like changed my life overnight with orders right. and all that kind of stuff.
Let's explain that, because for me, I think it's like when you came out with this and you shot that little promo video that you did with the...
Which that promo video was so sick when yeah. I first saw that.
Big fog machine guy.
Yeah.
but the ironic part was, luckily enough, I had done enough like tests on TikTok before where I was like, I need to shoot a real promo video like on the camera, and I need to shoot just a garbage one on my phone, because the phone clips at the time, I mean, even still...
pop off.
Yeah, way harder, just because people immediately connect with it more than what looks like an ad to them. So that got like 2 million views in the first day, and then I sold, I think, like 2,000 overnight. And which at the time...
insane.
Yeah.
Right. Mad which, respect.
Which was so funny, because I had just like redone the whole website, and then an old friend of mine gave me the blank mirror that everyone already knew about, and was like, a ton of different places sold those, but then it was like squeaky. And I was like, I'm going to try to take this thing apart, try to stuff some paper or something or tape to try to stop the squeaky. And then I got it out and I was like, oh, well, this might do a thing if I put a thing in here. And then I was like, oh, I'll put a 326 one. Didn't have one. And then I was like, oh, I have a dead on sticker. Put that inside, turned it on. And I was like,
this is sick.
Oh, I gotta sell these. Like, this is crazy. I can't wait. I'm gonna sell like probably like 6 or 7. And then so I posted it up knowing that I would get the orders as like a pre-order situation. And yeah, the whole rest of that
happened. So when you got like, let's say, that initial 2,000 orders overnight, did you have any made?
No, I just had the one. That's why
and harder really came into play.
That's huh? what I'm saying. Like, it was all of a sudden
reality check.
Yeah, it was like just
how stressed were you when you just kept seeing orders come in and come in and come in,
and oh, you knew dude. You didn't have inventory?
I was FaceTiming with somebody as it was happening, and it was so funny because I was just like, when I get an email, I have the same notification for everything. It was like bloop. I was like, oh, we're
sick.
Sold
sick.
One. Mm. An hour goes by. It's like, bloop, bloop. I'm like, ooh, sold 3. Hell yeah. Mom, I sold 3. This is sick. And then, like, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, it just starts being like, bloop, 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 like, doubling. Like, it was gnarly. I had it screen recorded on my old phone. I wish I still had it. But, yeah, that stuff just kind of took off. And then when I saw that the vision that I believed beforehand in TikTok, having an ability to expose you to so many different people and build an audience so much differently than all other social media places, I was like, oh, I gotta, this is it. Like,
really gotta push it.
Yeah, this is my job now. Like, I gotta go hard. And I ended up, I had to like stop posting too many mirror stuff because I didn't, like, I was getting too many orders where I was like, I'm not gonna be caught up for like another 6-7 months. Like, this is insane. Because it took me like 5 minutes a piece to make them. I did them all by hand. It was a nightmare. But eventually I ended up figuring it out, and it's a blessing. It's fucking wild. I still barely believe it. But
how much, like, time-wise, how much work went into, like, each mirror?
I would get on average anywhere from 80 to 120 mirrors done a day. And I worked 7 days a week, 8 a.m. till midnight or 1 a.m.
And so more than a full day.
Yeah, I did that for 6-7 months.
That's gnarly.
Just to get caught up.
That was gnarly.
It was a lot.
Like, and that just shows the level of commitment that you have to your brand to put out what you want to put out instead of somebody just being like, oh, just refund or never actually fulfill orders.
A lot of
brands I've seen in the past, let's say 3-4 years, they don't really fulfill orders.
Yeah, no. I mean, it took a while. People were pissed because they were like,
Yeah,
which was understandable, but I tried to make it as clear as many times as possible. I was like, yo, this wasn't like...
Intended to pop off.
Yeah, like before this, I was getting 10 orders a month. Now it's this, like, I don't know. I tried to be as... People were relatively understanding, so I was appreciative.
Yeah, but that's super cool how you're able to take this idea, right, that you had and use something within the car scene, something that you love and care about, and monetize it, find a way to monetize it and have that be the source that now not only brings you income, but allows you to progress in the car scene.
Yeah, which was, so because of that, towards the end of getting caught up with the mirrors and everything, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be able to like move out again and like all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, I'm finally going to be able to afford 326 brakes for my RC. And then I was like stoked on that for a day. And then the girl I was with at the time said something about it that made me like rethink it. And then I was like, wait, I could get the LC and just build, I could build the exact same car just on a different platform, the one I've always wanted, blah, blah, blah. And then that's how that whole thing started. Which led into the whole LC process of becoming all the shit we've talked about it already, you know?
Yeah.
So pretty much the overnight success of the mirrors influencing with Dead On, and all that really got you the LC. And it really...
Oh, 100%. Right. Yeah. But, it got me this apartment. It got me everything in this apartment. It got me the LC.
Right. But yeah. I don't want to say, Steven, something that you just said right now, too, is an overnight success. Granted, it was the one product that was an overnight success. This was years in the making.
So
you were dedicated not making
it. We talked about this a little bit before, where
not
it's just
making
like,
money.
From an outside perspective, it looks like it was all overnight, like hella random. Anybody could have done it. But
which I think we talked about that a little bit, where it's like from a viewpoint of a lot of people are like, oh, you just started this and you just popped off, when
you just saw it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like, I've been doing this since 2014.
You
like,
went through three brand changes trying to just supply the money to recoup at that point.
Yeah.
And now you're making money just in general.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
The mirrors was the point of payoff for those years and years of hard work.
Exactly. Which a lot of people will say is just like stupid luck or all this other shit, but I mean, that's why it didn't happen to you.
It's stupid. Yeah, right. Exactly. It's stupid luck.
That's why it happened to me, not you. Yeah. You didn't do the work. That's end of story. Sorry.
And at the end of it, like, is it really lucky that you had to sit till 1 a.m. in the morning?
Dude, it was so
hard work. Yeah.
But I mean, that was like the day I always dreamed about. So I woke up every morning. Yeah. And I was like, this is exactly what I wanted. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to stop until it's done.
Exactly that concept where so many people are like, oh, I'm willing to put in the work. Like, I want the work. I want to be successful. And then when it comes, they're like, oh,
wait, there's more work.
This is hard. I didn't realize this.
Yeah. You see a lot of that with everything. I mean,
because one thing about the hard work process is, if you're not going to like putting in the hard work, if you're not going to like the journey that it requires, the payoff is never going to be there, and you're not going to enjoy the payoff.
Yeah, you're always going to be miserable. I mean, I say that like I started Broke Boys to try to recoup some money from sliding my car into a curb. But in reality, it's like, that was always my goal. Like, I wanted to start a brand. That just gave me the excuse to do it. I never was, quote unquote, in it for the money, because I always knew there was no money in this. Like, there just wasn't back then, especially for like just a random dude just starting a new Instagram account and all that stuff. I knew it would be like losses for a long time. It's just, I just love it. That's all I've ever wanted to do.
It's a thing about loving the journey. Because if you don't love the journey, you're not going to
never.
No, it's not going to fulfill yourself.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the journey's definitely rough, but looking back, you enjoy it. Yeah.
It's got to be. There has to be failures with it, too. There's going to be the hard nights where it's like you just want to give up.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of making the choice to keep going, and it's going to pay off.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was a great way to kick off our first explanation and backstory of the three of us and just of Alex. And I want to give a little round of applause here for Alex.
Participation claps. Yeah.
Do you want a cookie?
After talking about all that stuff, I gotta shout some people out just because they are the ones who made it possible. Shout out Brandon Whited, shout out Yusuf, shout out all the Trap House homies, all the Sumo Speed homies, all those like OG Virginia, Tennessee, Carolina guys that really, really helped me out. Even like, you know, Yusuf, Triple OG, who I wouldn't have finished the Genesis without him because he was just, we were messaging each other trying to figure out that suspension at the same time, kind of. I definitely don't want to sit here and act like I did all everything myself and I had no help, blah, 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 all this stuff. I had some really helpful people along the way for sure.
But that's what it looks like from Instagram, Alex.
Yeah, bro. I don't know.
I guess that's a takeaway, right? Everybody, find a good set of people you can put in your corner and realize that if you're wanting to start on this journey towards anything, whatever it may be, that it's going to be long and it's going to be hard. And one day when it does pay off, you'll be, you know.
Well, how you're just saying, where you had a core group of people, work together with people that are like-minded, work together with people that have a love for cars, have a love for putting in the work and working together as a group of people Like it's a simple concept that people are overlooking, and we're joining together around cars that we love being around. Love being around cars.
It's like the Genesis being on jack stands for 6 months. I had a machinist homie, Alex, and my other homie, Ryan, who he was just like, yo, let's go to the shop. Let's try to make something on the lathe that'll make it work. And like stuff like that is how this shit really gets figured out. It's that like what we ended up doing didn't work. but I wouldn't have known to do the next step without that. And without that step, it all would have probably fell apart and all that kind of stuff.
Like having friends, or how should I say, having people around you that don't want to help you out or just do it for fun.
Yeah.
Rethink who's friends.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Like rethink that term.
Keep
friend.
A small circle, bro.
Because.
But really,
if you have those people around you,
everybody.
if you have those people around you, I wouldn't classify that as normal. Keep searching, because what's normal should be people that are in your circle taking care of you, or you're taking care of them too.
Yeah.
Respect both ways, and ultimately it's a communal
effort. There we go.
Yeah.
It's an effort put together.
Go scan something, dude.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just it's a together effort into working together and creating a good community.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of my little background, a speed run through the past however many years. I know this is kind of all over the place, and like I'm forgetting a ton of stuff, the people, brands, timeline stuff. But yeah, I'm still uncomfortable and getting used to the whole podcast thing. So give me a break.
Leave me alone.
Yeah, please.
But with that, since now we're in current time, since we just talked about everything.
Yeah, we're all caught up.
I think that's a good time to move into our current event now. So
current event. Toyota is bringing back the manual and the Supra.
Manual Supra.
Manual Supra. This
is that a Supra?
Is that a I already bought an automatic one?
I'm sorry, that was a big reaction, but that was hilarious. Because that is how I guarantee you a ton of people who are enthusiasts who are like, man, I'm getting this new Supra because it's so sick, this, that, whatever. And then Toyota is like, thank you for everybody who supported us already. And
thank you for
Toyota.
Giving us so much money so now we can make you a manual one.
Yeah.
We heard you guys, And we will make a manual one.
It's so good. It's so exciting. It's like everything everybody wanted, but also
a little too late.
Just how, I mean, I don't know how I would feel if they released, if Lexus all of a sudden was like, hey guys, guess what? Manual LC. I'm going to jump off a building, dude. Like, I feel for you automatic super owners who really want this.
Because it's gonna Toyota, be a pain in the ass. I guarantee you, it was like, we heard you. We'll now offer a manual transmission Supra. Yeah. For all of you who bought the Supra already. You can trade it in, but we'll give you half price.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, I mean,
well, honestly, now with this news come out that just came out, everybody who has an automatic Supra, sell that shit right now. Put it on the market. Get your money
before
for it.
Before that thing comes out. Right. But it's really just to compete with like the new Z and like all that stuff, because right. I think they're going manual.
Yeah, again, I think this kind of relates back to the current event that we kind of spoke about last week, how we are in this new enthusiast time period where we're building cars and manufacturers are listening because they know the community wanted a manual, so they're providing it.
Yeah, GR Corolla, manual. Z, right. Manual. 86 BRZ, manual. Supra. Now needs to be a manual.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's funny going back to like, because even the GT3, the brand new GT3.
Yep. Offered in manual.
Offered in manual.
Which is awesome.
Are they listening to us finally, which they've never done in the past? Or are they being like, ooh, everything's about to go electric. We should do one last hurrah on everything.
That is also a great standpoint because we are quickly seeing people transition into electric cars.
Way faster than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're making them, dare I say it, they're making them pretty sick.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole thing is like the public originally when we were looking at like Priuses, and I know it's not electric, but like
the hybrid thing.
Yeah, leading down that road, everyone was like, this is ugly, slow, and stupid. And now it's like every electric car is faster than anything. Any gas car. Right. Like it's
and it looks pretty sick.
Some
and
of them, yeah.
All these new automators, like that's what they're putting their money into. Mm-hmm. So all these new cars that are coming out are going to be full EV cars. So they're restyling them accordingly. And so many new cars are like, they're looking crazy, crazy cool. But now, they're electric.
I may have gotten got, but take this with a grain of salt. Don't believe me 100%.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I did see on TikTok that there's the biggest red flag. I saw it on TikTok. I heard Toyota had some sort of patent that someone found or something that they were working on a gearbox for electric vehicles. Now, I don't know how real that is.
So that
we need some research because that would be curious as to.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic. But right. There could be, they could, if they're doing this because they're listening to us, that would make sense that they would carry on and try to make an enthusiast platform out of these electric cars.
So there's a couple companies that already have like multi-speed electric cars, but a manual gearbox electric car. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, like with a clutch. Like what?
Yeah, that's insane. That'll be interesting. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see from that point. But back to
the Supra.
Back to the Supra.
Yeah. Also, what I'm interested in with this, so like the Supra, having already been out, and we're knowing that the majority of the Supras have been mass produced in an automatic, and my theory is that we're going to see the same problem that we have with the GT3. And what do I mean by that? Well, Porsche obviously mass produces their cars in automatic. So when they offered that manual transmission for the new GT3, it was like $40,000 more expensive. Is the manual transmission Supra going to be more expensive because it's more desired and they're making less?
I honestly think that it's going to be MSRP'd as either just more because it's newer, but dealer markup, I feel like they are going to wreck us.
Oh, because people want it.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh, you want the manual? Oh,
we know you have no other option. Like, you want this car, this is the car. Like, there isn't like...
Yeah. How many manuals, transmission supers are going to be made?
They're going to be like, you're going to pay whatever we're going to tell you you're going to pay. Because that's the only option.
Yep.
And right now as we know, when the Supra first came out, they were the V6. Mm-hmm. And then they came out with a lower platform after that, which is like RIP to the people who wanted to buy a little bit cheaper of a Supra. Yeah. And they offer the 4-cylinder, we have no idea what car this is going to be in. If it's going to be available for both, if it's not.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
We have no idea.
Yeah.
What platform it's going to.
It's got to be the six-cylinder, right? Oh. It's got to.
It's got to be. Yeah. But you have no idea.
If they don't, that's we'll a whole other type of fumble, dude.
Because they put a bunch of development into that six-cylinder into the existing Super chassis, so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll definitely see.
That's a good point.
But.
They say that the Super is supposed to get a significant change every year. And this is the first year, and the significant change is the manual. So I'm really interested to see what next year might hold.
Yeah, the lineage.
I think the Super got a little scared because the GR Corolla is getting all the spotlight.
Hey, man, they're brother and sister. It's all right.
I think they are coming out with heavy hitter after heavy hitter. So they knew that the Corolla was going to pop off. And I think they're just waiting to sprinkle that. Because let's talk about the way that they announced it. They posted a picture on Twitter with three pedals and said, so you think we're done?
Yeah.
Hashtag Supra.
Which, respect to them.
Hashtag manual. And that's it. That's
not
all
playing around.
I like it. It's clean. It's around. Like just, hey, screw the competition.
Right.
We're doing it again.
No, JDM automakers, they're definitely stepping up the game in the early 2020s.
Now, if only we could get a Volkswagen Scirocco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A new one.
Yeah. A new one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they are. I'll give that to you, Steven.
Those I might be trying to soon. We'll see.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about that off camera.
We will definitely talk about that later. But yeah. So off that, we're going to move into late night callouts.
And up first is not me this time because I got to pull up my phone. So one of y'all go.
Tyler.
Okay. So for it. I'm going to shout out. I don't want to butcher your name, but Tawny with the RX-7 is making an absolutely wild handmade fiberglass wide body RX-7, which is very reminiscent of a previous kit that kind of existed, but very unique into itself as he's manufacturing the whole thing by himself. And I just have mad respect for people who make their own parts because I know it takes a lot of time and dedication to make it look good. And not only that, to like learn how to make all these things. He has all these intricate vents, curves. It's a very difficult like shape to have come up with and just make out of thin air with your hands. Not really out of thin air with fiberglass and resin and stuff, but you know.
Yeah. Can't be created nor destroyed.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, yeah, that sounds pretty wild.
It's sick.
Yeah.
What about you, Steven?
So I'm going to choose a buddy I've known for a little bit through Mark Sixes. His Instagram name is Odd Composites. And he doesn't really have showcase build to show. Instead, he's more so hands-on in terms of projects he does. So he's actually the fabricator for Battle Arrow. So he's the guy behind the scenes creating the wide body kits, all the development prototype stuff for Battle Arrow in terms of their wide body kits and everything like that. And I'm not sure if anybody of you've seen on Battle Arrow's page or Rob Dom's page, he's a hands-on guy developing Rob Dom's wide body for his RX-7.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, super cool dude, super knowledgeable, and he's actually helped me out giving me tips on a lot of the process when it comes to wide body creation, fiberglass work, and all that. So it's definitely helped me given that I'm developing my own wide body and bringing it to production as well. So super cool dude, and does great work. Definitely give him a follow just because he's going to be going through a lot of cool projects, and he already has, so definitely follow along there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Rob Dom's RX-7, I actually saw. I didn't know that was who you were talking about. And seeing them go through the whole process where they came in, 3D scanned everything, made things out of mold. They 3D printed it and then like made the actual thing or however they did it. It was absolutely crazy, and they did it like wicked fast.
Super fast, yeah.
Well,
how about you, Alex?
I got to read this one because it's not really a name. Dude in Japan. Shout out KA9_8200. He has one of the this is a screenshot. He has one of the most gnarly S13s hatches I've ever seen because he grafted, I believe, the rear section of the roof of a old Z to get rid of like the OEM S13 hatch And then on top of that, he did full radius fenders and quarters,
ooh,
like some custom work on a BN style kit. Yeah. It's super unique, of course. 3-2-6 wing.
3-2-6.
And he drifts the living shit out of it. So it's insane.
That's rad.
Yeah, that sounds extremely rad. I was going to pull out my phone to look at it right now.
I always feel like you guys go into way more detail on these things, but this is how I talk about cars. I like it.
I think seeing photos of this will just explain things to begin with.
Yeah.
I have a thing for high radius.
So do I.
Yeah.
High radius stuff, because it's just like, I don't know. I like that the car is super low, but then the fitment is just right there. No tuck. It looks solid.
That's why, sorry to get off topic real quick. That's why I like the front end of the LC so much. It's because those front fenders sit super high for stock.
Yep.
And so your fitment is almost right below where the hood level is. But yeah, similar to that look. It's gnarly. Go check it out.
Shout out to everybody that we just talked about. Huge thank you guys again for watching, listening, wherever you're consuming our podcast at. And drop a comment down below and tell us what you think about anything that happened in this. If you loved it, if you hate it, let Alex know, because I don't want to hear it.
Definitely DM him.
I hate myself. I hate talking about myself. I never want to do this again. And we will see you guys in the next episode. Okay,
bye.
Peace.